for joining us for this episode of the MHP podcast. I have Dr. Kristen Gowan with us from Ashwell Arthritis here, and we're going to talk about various topics in rheumatology. We're very excited to have her with us today. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
So we often like to start off a conversation about what brought you to rheumatology, what, you know, where the passion for the work comes from and what brought you to this. So.
I would say that I probably got interested in rheumatology when I was a third-year medical student doing my internal medicine rotation and having to read through the whole book of internal medicine and thinking that the diseases in rheumatology are really fascinating and mysterious, and you kind of have to be a good detective to figure out what's going on with a lot of these things, which are, you know, can be esoteric, but some of them are relatively routine, but can be more challenging to diagnose.
Right. Thinking about how patients with autoimmune conditions often present, when is the right time to do serologies and the pitfalls? Because we all know that there are false positives, and if you can help us start to understand that a little bit.
Right. So I think if you're looking at joint pain in particular, you have to think about whether the patients actually have joint pain from inflammation or joint pain from something else. So they can have joint pain from inflammation, but they can also have joint pain from damage, or they can have joint pain as a somatic symptom of something else, an endocrine disorder, or something like depression, even. Or they can have a viral illness. So you can get joint pain for a lot of reasons, but what should, I guess, tip you off is chronic joint pain. So anything more than 6 weeks is unlikely to be an acute viral syndrome, though there are a couple viral illnesses that cause prolonged joint pain. So if it lasts for more than 6 weeks, and particularly if they have morning stiffness, so if they have more than an hour worth of morning stiffness in their joints, that's inflammatory joint pain.
Okay.
There are other things, in particular fibromyalgia, which we'll talk about some more about later, I guess, that the patients can have prolonged morning stiffness, but they won't have it with swelling in their joints, and they won't have it in a distribution of joints that's typical for something like rheumatoid or some other kind of inflammatory arthritis. So if you have people with chronic joint pain and they have more than an hour worth of morning stiffness, then you should be thinking that maybe those people have some kind of inflammatory arthritis. I think for things like psoriatic arthritis, family history is very important, and actually it's in the diagnostic criteria for psoriatic arthritis, whether you have a personal or a family history of psoriasis, because some people with psoriatic arthritis actually will get their arthritis before they have psoriasis, or they'll even get back pain or inflammatory back pain stuff before they get their peripheral joint pain or before their joint symptoms turn up. So I think that's important to ask about psoriatic arthritis, but other diseases that can cause inflammatory arthritis can be familial or, you know, have some genetic predisposition. So any of the connective tissue diseases, lupus, Sjogren's, those kind of things, rheumatoid arthritis, there's a small family clustering of those kind of things.
The decision then to do serologies comes with it some problems. We often will get ANAs with relatively low titers, and then trying to understand the degree of positivity and its relevance to actually making the diagnosis. If you can help us a little bit understand first, you know, when to go ahead, if we go ahead and decide to do serologies, should that always be coupled with a referral? And if so, where do we make that cutoff?
So I would say it kind of depends on what other symptoms the patients have. So if they strictly have joint pain and you're worried that they have something like rheumatoid arthritis, they have the morning stiffness, they have proximal joint involvement, like the metacarpal phalangeal joints in their wrists or their metatarsophalangeal joints, and not just, you know, knobby fingers that are a little sore. So those people, doing the rheumatoid testing actually has some predictive value. So if you look at you know, how you evaluate testing, so you want to pick something with a high positive predictive value, meaning that it's positive in people who really have disease and there aren't a lot of false positives. And I'll talk about that more when I talk about ANAs. But for rheumatoid, the predictive value of a positive rheumatoid factor is about 29%, which is actually not bad for rheumatology testing. So 29% of your mm-hmm. people that have positive rheumatoid factors are going to have rheumatoid arthritis, and 39% of those people are going to have some other kind of autoimmune disease like Sjogren's that right. has positive rheumatoid factors.
Right.
And the rheumatoid factor is in the diagnostic criteria for a rheumatoid. So if you're really worried about rheumatoid, it probably makes sense to do the four tests that are in the ACR criteria for rheumatoid, which is rheumatoid factor anti-CCP, which is cyclic citrullinated protein.
Nice.
Sometimes you have to find that way for your test ordering. So mm-hmm. cyclic citrullinated protein.
Perfect.
SED rate and quantitative CRP. So you don't okay. want to use semi-quantitative CRP or the high sensitivity CRP.
Right.
Most people who have an elevated quantitative CRP will also have an elevated quantitative HSCRP, but that's not specifically for inflammation. So those four tests, rheumatoid factor, anti-CCP, SED rate, CRP. And then depending on how many of those are positive, it increases your likelihood that you have rheumatoid arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, we see all these other kinds of inflammatory arthritis that don't have positive tests because they're not rheumatoid. And most of that is psoriatic arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
So those patients are known to be seronegative, so they don't have rheumatoid factor.
Right.
And that's actually another thing in the diagnostic criteria for psoriatic arthritis. So personal or family history of psoriasis, and then being seronegative for rheumatoid factor and anti-CCP.
Sure.
So those four tests I would definitely do if you think somebody has inflammatory arthritis. But if they're negative and you still think they have inflammation because of swelling and morning stiffness, we should see those people because not everybody has rheumatoid arthritis and will show up with the rheumatoid criteria.
Right.
So the question about what other tests you do, I mean, I think you have to evaluate the patient and make sure they don't have something like hypothyroidism, which causes
right.
a lot of joint pain. And the other thing that I think is really, the other two things I think are pretty important to do is to check hepatitis C, which
right.
everybody's supposed to get screened for pretty much now, because hepatitis C can cause actually inflammatory arthritis
right.
and can cause positive rheumatoid factors.
Right.
And to check vitamin D's. Vitamin D levels are, you know, epidemically low, and we've done a really good job of telling people to wear sunscreen, so there's a lot of vitamin D deficiency out there, and vitamin D deficiency can cause joint pain as well. So if you do those things, test the four, rheumatoid, thyroid, hepatitis C, and vitamin D, you're going to pick up a lot of your joint pain, which is treatable. And then the question of whether to do an ANA or not comes up. I think that unless you have a compellingly good reason to do an ANA, like if someone has a photosensitive rash
sure.
or a malar rash or something that's clearly a discoid rash, or they have kidney disease
mm-hmm.
or you know, undiagnosed anemia or a low white blood cell count, that you probably shouldn't do an ANA. Because if you look at the positive predictive value of an ANA in a general medical practice, it's actually only 2%.
Wow.
So it's really a poor screening test
right.
for people who just have joint pain in general and don't have specific symptoms of lupus.
And I imagine in the general primary care population, the bulk of the ANAs are done on folks with the chief complaint of pain without any other systemic symptoms or signs.
Right. So the study I looked up last night, the patients where they did the testing for the predictive value of ANA, 23% of those people, it was done for just widespread pain.
Right.
And you know, the ANA is one of those tests that's kind of an operator-dependent thing, so
mm-hmm.
it depends on how you run the test and whether you run it by the method that the American College of Rheumatology recommends. And unfortunately, some of the big reference labs use the wrong assay, so they get a lot of false positive tests, or they get a lot of low titer tests
right.
that they say are positive that really we don't consider positive. So 1 to 40 or 1 to 80, we don't worry about those because those really are negative tests, but they list them as positive, or they just give you a value of positive and they don't give you any kind of titer, so you don't know how high it is.
Right. And then that triggers a referral often,
right,
necessarily.
Right. And, you know, if someone comes to see us for an ANA and we do all the lupus testing, it's about $800.
Wow.
And, you know, if only 2% of those people actually have lupus,
right,
that's a huge waste of money. And it
sure
creates a group of people that are really worried that they have lupus for months sometimes before they can get in to see us.
Absolutely. Right. And often in this area, probably driving for hours to come see,
right,
you. There are not that many rheumatologists, I don't think, in Western,
right,
North Carolina, right?
No. I think I counted yesterday. There are 15 of us. Three are getting ready to retire or,
wow,
are doing administrative stuff. So that leaves 12 people for the entire western side of the state.
Yeah, unbelievable. Yeah, so being a little smarter about our referrals makes some sense.
Right.
In terms of the capacity issue. If you decide somebody has a photosensitive rash, as you discussed, or a malar rash, typical rash, or systemic symptoms that might be suspicious of a connective tissue disease, and you decide to do an ANA, are there other tests similar to what we discussed with rheumatoid? Are there other things that you would want besides the ANA and perhaps that you would want prior to the referral that would help you in terms of easing the diagnosis?
I think that, you know, thinking about other organ system,
mm-hmm,
things in lupus in particular, you certainly would want a CBC and a metabolic panel for creatinine and a urinalysis.
Okay.
Those are probably the important things. SED rate and CRP,
right,
may or may not be elevated, but,
okay,
really aren't in the diagnostic criteria for lupus.
So.
But if they have something inflammatory, those tests are going to be high,
sure,
but not diagnostic.
Okay. It may be helpful, but perhaps not necessary.
Right. And, you know, some people ask me, should we do the extractable nuclear antigen things, mm-hmm, or the SSA, SSB?
Right.
That, I think it's probably better to wait on those, because if we don't think they really have something in,
right,
we don't want to do all that testing and then repeat it.
Right.
And some of the reference labs that have a lot of false positive ANAs have false positive double-stranded DNAs and SSBs and other of those tests. So it's probably better to do a full evaluation and decide if the people need that whole panel of things.
Yeah, often. Find, I think a lot of primary care physicians will see the consult notes back and say, okay, this is what they did last time when I sent a patient with this type of thing, without maybe appreciating the nuances, and then we'll,
mm-hmm,
reflexively order them in advance the next time.
Right.
So that's an important,
right, thing. Right. Or they'll order single-stranded DNA, which we don't even do because it doesn't, it's not really a diagnostic test for anything. Double-stranded DNA, if you do it in a place that doesn't have a high false positive rate, is actually a pretty good test because it's quite specific for lupus, though there are a few other things like autoimmune hepatitis and Sjogren's where you can get positive double-stranded DNAs, but it's not a good screening test. It's a very specific test, though.
And one of the things you said earlier, I think that's important to emphasize, is that the reference lab sometimes, between their false positive rate or their appropriate assays, it's an important thing to consider.
Yes.
So if we're going to do it in the primary care setting, just be aware that,
right,
it comes with some risk in terms of false positives and,
yes,
imprecise results.
Thank you for listening to the MHP podcast, and I apologize for the slight audio issues at the end of the first half of our podcast with Dr. Kristen Gowan. We will continue the second half of our conversation on MHP podcast episode 6. Look forward to talking with you then. Thank you.